Influencers is brought to you by
7Seas. Start your day the right way. Soya Studios, located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road West. ACG Wholesale, with quality service and great prices. The Beauty Barn, hair and beauty supplies, delivering beauty products straight to your door. WhatsApp 242-812-8500. Real Time Sound Studios. And Global Transformation Media, transforming you from the inside out. Welcome to Influencers on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM, and I'm your host, Lady Shima. And on this radio show, we take you into the world of leaders within Bahamian society and the global community to give you insight on how they use their influence to bring about positive change. We provide this platform for influencers to inspire our listeners with their personal stories on how they maneuver and strategize to still be impactful and influential even in this new norm environment post-COVID-19. It is our hope that the stories and insight of the influences we bring to you will inspire you to use the power of your influence to bring about transformational change to your immediate environment, Bahamian society, and for some even across international divides. And today we delve into the mind of a cabinet minister who is faced with the very arduous task of navigating what has become the very troubled waters of global travel as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Since the Bahamas' opening for international travel on July 1st, 2020, the nation's number one industry, tourism, has seriously struggled and continues to do so. Nevertheless, very recently, there has been a breakthrough of a glimmer of hope for the industry, with its forecast and projected numbers in the coming months and years. Today, I speak with influencer, the Honorable Dionisio de Aguila, Minister of Tourism and Aviation, and a Member of Parliament for Freetown, as we discuss the topic, Tourism Making a Comeback. All this and more when we return here on Influencers on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM. Need your picture taken? Well, if you want it to look its best, then go to the best. It's Soya Studios, capturing your special events, portraits, passport, job, and visa photos. Plus, there's more. Also offering professional printing services of business cards, letterheads, signs, and banners. Opened Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a legacy. 28 years and growing. Located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road. Call 361-7786.
Start your day the right way with 7Seas.
Start your day the right way. Trust in the timeless tradition of 7Seas Cod Liver Oil. 7Seas Cod Liver Oil is a rich, natural source of omega-3, giving you the essential nutrients needed to promote good health and help make sure you're looking and feeling your very best. Whether it's one a day, high strength, or traditional, with 7Seas Cod Liver Oil, you start your day the right way.
Start your day the right way with 7Seas.
ACG Wholesale is the answer for retail grocery store owners and everyday shoppers who want to save big. ACG carries a variety of drinks, snacks, meat products, essential dry goods like rice and yellow grits, plus lots of wholesome produce. And ACG Wholesale is a proud distributor of Borden's Milk. Opened Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located next to Phoenix Supermarkets on East Street South. Call 392-1155. That's ACG Wholesale with quality service and great prices. Welcome back to Influencers, and I'm your host, Lady Shima. And with me today is the Honorable Dionisio de Aguila, Minister of Tourism and Aviation, and a Member of Parliament for Freetown. Welcome to the show. Great to have you back again.
Lady Shima, it's my second time on your show, and I'm delighted to be back. It's always a wonderful show, so I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you very much. And our topic for today, of course, as you just heard, making a comeback. And that is, of course, tourism, our number one industry. But before we get into the meat of our topic for today, let's start off on a not so heavy note. As the Minister of Tourism, the FNM MP for Freetown, you have oversight of your grant for the arts, an executive of many businesses, major businesses, owner of Superwash, and I can go on and on with that list. But what or who are the two biggest influencers in Dionisio's life when it comes to simultaneously managing all of these major responsibilities?
So my best friend, my best counsel, the person who guides me every day when I have a conundrum or I don't know what decision to make about certain things mm-hmm. is, of course, my wife.
Yes.
She is the person who keeps me grounded mm-hmm. and keeps me focused and keeps me principled.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And, you know, I can always go to her. I don't necessarily always agree or like to hear what she has to say, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but I think it's extremely important for me to hear it. Mm-hmm. And no matter what she says, it's always resounding in the back of my brain as I'm coming to the conclusion mm-hmm. that I am. And no, we've been married for 31 years. She's
wow.
my best friend.
That's amazing.
And, yes. you know, when someone is your best friend,
yes.
I always think that's the ingredient of a successful marriage.
Mm-hmm.
When she's your best friend, you want to spend all of your time with her. You want to do things with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have a wonderful relationship, two great kids, and mm-hmm. I'm blessed.
She keeps you grounded. She
yes.
keeps you principled.
Yeah.
And the second person would be?
So I guess the safest bet to go with is my mother,
mm-hmm.
who is a little extreme,
mm-hmm.
and but she is, you know, she's 86 years old.
Mm-hmm. 86,
so she's
wow.
got definitive views.
Uh-huh.
She's less of a compromiser,
mm-hmm.
But you certainly know where she stands. And she, of course, was another product of a very long marriage, 51 years to my father, only broken
mm-hmm.
by the fact that he passed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And she is extremely, how should I say, she's another very moral person.
Mm-hmm.
She has definitive views on what is right.
Mm-hmm. So that moral compass set in there.
She is, you know, she's one of them old-fashioned Bahamian mothers. Is right is right and wrong is wrong.
Yeah.
And she ain't on no run, and there's nothing fuzzy but her.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that is always good to hear. I'm always going, Mother,
mm-hmm.
you need to calm down. Calm down for what? I'm 86 years old. I can say what I want to say. I reached that stage in my life. So it's uh-huh. always good to hear that.
So
hear that view. So it's I guess I'm guided by women,
mm-hmm.
my wife and my mother.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah. So you know, those are the ones that they're the two ladies in my life I have to answer to every
uh-huh.
day. And so I make sure that I have them on point and have them on base.
So the influencing compass.
Yes.
Two women, wife and mother. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What are two strong points that you believe that you possess that influences the way that you lead?
Based on experiences.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, so you've, you know, as I look at my life, I graduated from a reputable university in the United States. I worked in New York, and I came home, and for the past 25 years before I went into government,
mm-hmm.
I ran Superwash, and I made a success of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I made a success of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really... The experience of that helps me to, guides me to, I figure myself, I'm a practical person.
Mm-hmm.
I like to have solutions. I like
Good.
Things to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
I like for there to be compromise. I don't like dissension.
Okay.
So I'm always trying to bring a positive outcome.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And, you know, I don't catch feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't let that get in the way of a solution. You might... You know, row me one day, but that's uh-huh. all right. That's
mm-hmm.
life. I could get
you don't wear it on your sleeve.
And I want there to be a positive outcome, and I want
Correct.
As many people as possible to benefit
mm-hmm.
From the cause that we're fighting, or the business that we're running, or the issue we're trying to resolve.
So, yes, uh-huh.
you know that is as a result. I think I'm very practical.
Okay,
I try to be affable,
mm-hmm.
And try to nudge and nuance.
Of course.
To a solution that benefits as many people mm-hmm. as possible.
A beneficial outcome.
Yeah.
That's good. I wanted to ask you these questions on leadership because, you know, everything rises and falls on leadership. And leadership is really the cause as to where we are now as a country, as a people. And you are manning, you are leading the biggest industry that impacts the GDP of the Bahamas by about around 60%. And that's major. But right before we get off the leadership bit, I want to ask you this last question about leadership. I think it's not only important to know about your strengths, but also your weaknesses. So what are two areas of weaknesses, if you have any, that influence how you make leadership decisions? And what would you say you're doing to improve on these areas of weaknesses?
So if I had to say that I had a weakness, I'm not as decisive.
Okay.
As I could be. So I sometimes let situations stew and kind of play out. I could have gone in quicker.
A little bit too long, maybe?
Yeah. I call it the dither stage. You dither a little too long.
Okay.
And you see situations developing and you kind of sort of step back and say, okay, I wonder how this is going to evolve, when I could have stepped in and settled it as quickly as possible. And, and a second weakness is that, you know, I don't address issues or problems that I have as quickly as I think I should. I'll see the email and I'll just flip over it.
Okay.
And I'll say, okay, well, let me put that off for another day, or I want to run right now, so let me put that off and let me deal with that later. And really, I think it probably dithers on a little bit too long. Once again, coming back to this ditherous gene, my wife is much more decisive. She comes to conclusions much quicker than me. Mm-hmm. I kind of, I stew.
So you like to use the word dither?
Yeah, where I don't come to a conclusion quickly.
Uh-huh.
And
do you think that this particular characteristic may have impacted what it is that we're seeing in tourism as of lately at all?
Not really.
As it relates to your leadership style and maybe some of the areas of weaknesses with your leadership?
No, because, in this particular job, I think this is always the greatest complaint against the politician, is they always come in and think they know everything.
Mm-hmm.
They come in and they're experts day one. Mm-hmm. I tell people, I ran laundromats. I'm an accountant. Yes, I understand the business of tourism, but I'm not a tourism expert.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very important that you listen, you learn, you talk to as many stakeholders as possible, and then you gather it up, and then you make an informed decision as best as you can, trying to impact positively as many people as you can. I think, some people come in and say, oh, I know this and I know that. And I think, you have to learn to listen and let people talk. Let them get, one of the things I learned at Superwash was if someone came into a laundromat and something went wrong, their clothes got burnt in a dryer, right? So they come in and the first thing they want to do, or they got bad service from an attendant, the first thing they want to do is vent. So you let them vent.
Yes.
You let them get everything off their chest. You let them talk. You let them say whatever it is. And then you attempt to address their problem. And I think the same attribute that I learned in Superwash, I have acquired in tourism. And I don't want anyone to ever to say that I came in there and I was doing this and doing that and doing this. And, he know what he talking about. And he always think he know the answers. And I want to make sure that I have spoken to the stakeholders and I come to an informed decision. Now, I think what helps me, gives me credibility, is the fact that I was successful at business. And so when I come into a room, people are like, okay, well, this man was, he did a good job running his company, he's successful in business and all that.
Yes.
And so that gives me a...
There's a confidence factor.
Yeah. So, but I don't abuse that. I think it's important that, talk to me. And I always go to people, what would you do? What do you think?
That's good. Do you believe that you're surrounded by the right minds to really steer the ship through these troubled waters?
So I think... In tourism, I'm blessed with the best.
That's good.
I think that the senior leadership at the Ministry of Tourism has been first class. I've got a smart, bright, intelligent, hardworking, industrious senior management team, and it begins to filter through the ministry. I think we really, in the public service, have the best and the brightest. And then also... as you morph into the other part, this is the less talked about part of my ministry, which is aviation.
Okay.
I've got a lot of bright technical people. It's a very technical field.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to rely on their advice.
Yes.
Almost exclusively, because I don't know anything about that field, right? I understand the business of aviation. I can understand that. But you're always talking to stakeholders and you're talking to your, director general of the civil aviation, a very technical field. I must say that I've been blessed with very good people. And I think, once again, you got to be a good listener. You have to know what questions to ask.
Of course, yes.
And you have to say, I always ask, so what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
I may be the big time minister, but you tell me what would you do? If you was in this job, what would you do?
Yeah, it's great that you're so teachable, minister, because, that seems to be the downfall of a lot of political leaders. And that is, I am the end all and be all of, what this country is about. And don't tell me nothing, right? And so it's really, really important to have that kind of a mentality when it comes to growth and expansion. So I applaud that. Let's start off on the home front with what's going on with tourism here in New Providence, that is. The latest major crystallization of the downturn in tourism of course, that has been the case around the world in dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. These words here by the managing director of Atlantis, Audrey Oswell. She said in a letter that was written to, unfortunately, some 700 that were made redundant at the hotel property, "We are collectively living through the worst pandemic of our lifetime. And as it began to unfold, global travel came to a standstill. Our business suffered significant losses. And in response, we drastically cut costs that touched nearly every corner of Atlantis. While we expect Atlantis to recover fully and business volumes continue to increase since reopening, the significant changes we will undergo are not temporary or short-lived. Because of this, we need to make fundamental shifts by reducing the size of our workforce around a more focused business strategy." And of course, as we know, out of 7,300 Atlantis team members or employees, 700 were made redundant. As the Minister of Tourism, what's your response to this major change at Atlantis?
So if you look at the stats for the Bahamas, tourism arrivals were down 74% in 2020. And if you didn't have January, February, March, it would have been down in excess of 90%. So tourism has been significantly negatively impacted.
Yes.
And
yes.
Anybody in that business has seen a drastic fall off in their business. And so it was inevitable that there was going to be dislocation. They have to downsize because you simply don't have the business. Unlike the government, which could keep all of its staff employed, obviously businesses don't have the ability to do that.
That's right.
And so, unfortunately, Mrs. Oswald is absolutely correct. They were significantly impacted by COVID-19. And, you know, I think what the 700 employees, and a number of them, of course, live in Freetown. And what they said to me was that, you know, you've had me off. You've had me furloughed. You've sort of hidden behind the emergency orders, and you haven't severed me. And I moved on with my life. I mean, you've sent me home quite some time ago. I obviously haven't worked in a meaningful way.
That's right.
For quite some time. And I want our relationship to be terminated. I want to be severed. Pay me my money. Let me move on with my life, right? And so in one instance, there was a group of those persons, or a number of them, that wanted to be severed and moved on. They'd moved on to another job and all the rest of it.
Does that number accrue to about 700, though?
No, I don't think so.
So,
you know, there are obviously, and it, you know, it's painful as this whole COVID-19 experience has been. People who were permanently disengaged.
Yes.
And I understand why. I don't like it. I understand, you know, in 2019, we had 7.2 million foreign visitors, the most in ever in the history of the Bahamas.
That's right.
And then here we are down 74% in 2020. You know, it is unfortunate. But you got to look forward. So now we've come, this is a full bell curve, down to the bottom. We've hit the rock bottom. And we are now beginning to trend back up. And luckily for us, most of our foreign visitors come from the United States. And the United States has done a very good job of vaccinating its people. And so their economy is bouncing back robustly. And as a result, people are now, as I always say, the more people get vaccinated, the more emboldened they are to travel. So now they want to travel. Now they may be a little cautious about going overseas, but they want to travel. So I anticipate, I'm optimistic, that there's a rebound afoot. And I can see in the number of people that are applying for a health visa, people who are expressing an interest to, I bought a ticket, I want to come to the Bahamas. So
yes,
these are people
yes.
at the final stage of the exercise of coming to the Bahamas. I see those numbers robustly increasing. Every month they're getting a bit more. So I know that we're heading back in that direction. And when I speak to Mrs. Oswald about, so what's happening in your industry, they say, "Oh, we're seeing the pace of bookings is very robust. It's coming back quicker than we anticipated. We're thinking that we're going to have a good June, July, a good summer months, and we're quietly optimistic that things are turning. I mean, it's not hard to turn from what happened in 2020 because that was the worst of the worst.
And so things are bouncing back. Are we going to go back to 2019? Not immediately. Probably not for another, 12 to 24 months.
Okay.
But I expect, and I'm optimistic, that as Americans get vaccinated, they gonna want travel.
Okay, now you're talking about this vaccination word quite a bit, and we're going to be talking about this quite a bit during the course of the show a little bit later on. But I just want to ask you, as it relates to Atlantis, do you believe that there are plans in place, or do you know, of having those persons who did not want to be let go from Atlantis, that they would be re-engaged as a result of the turn up in the tourism numbers at the hotel property?
So Atlantis will ultimately need staff. I think that there's probably, with the 6,000 plus that are
still
there, there's probably still some slack in the system. And you want, everybody wants 5 days a week minimum. So you want to be engaged. So I may be engaged, but on 1 day a week or 2 days a week. So I guess what they did was they looked at the headcount and said, look, we're not going to be able to meaningfully engage these persons. Some of them have expressed an interest in moving on. So let's bring some finality to their relationship with Atlantis.
Okay.
Now, if they want to come back, and as we need people, I mean, clearly for me, at least from a business standpoint, assuming they were good employees, you already know the system. You require probably a lot less training.
Right.
And it's probably easier for me to re-engage you.
Yes.
So, I think that, and once you've worked in an environment like Atlantis, you can easily move to other hospitality-related business, other hotels that would feed off your experiences that you had at Atlantis and understand that you've had this depth of training and so therefore be willing to engage you. And as businesses gear back up, as cruising resumes, so too will the demand for labor increase.
Let's talk a little bit about this vaccination point. It sounds like you based a lot of the confidence in traveling on this vaccination element. And let's talk about that on the home front. I saw a picture there where you would have gotten the jab yourself.
I've had my second shot.
You've had your second shot. So you're fully vaccinated, Minister.
Fully vaccinated on the 31st of this month, May. I will be at my 14th day. And so I will consider myself fully vaccinated.
And of course, the only vaccine in country is the AstraZeneca, the Oxford AstraZeneca, which is still receiving quite a bit of flack as it relates to the populace at large here in the Bahamas, and with reason. Let's talk a little bit about that, Minister, because of course there's this all-out thrust by the government, period, that we want as many Bahamians to be vaccinated as possible. Let's look at the numbers a little bit here. As of the latest numbers, according to the Ministry of Health, the total that's been administered thus far, 50,242 persons who have received their first dose, 44,226. Here in New Providence, almost 33,000. I'm rounding that off there. And the fully vaccinated, 6,016. Here in New Providence, 4,893. Is this near to what you're wanting these numbers to look like?
No.
They're not?
No. It is a little disheartening that the level of hesitancy is at the point where it is. And, a critical component to the rebound of our economy is the amount of people that get vaccinated. Now, all the rating agencies ask for it. Persons who are contemplating a vacation to the Bahamas want to know it. And let me tell you why. So right now we're on the CDC level 4 in the United States. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're saying to their citizenry in the United States, do not travel to the Bahamas because they got too much COVID. Right? So if you're thinking about planning a group or a convention or a conference in a foreign country, you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to book my guests to a country that is ranked by the CDC at level 4.
Are we still at level 4 right now?
Correct. Yes, we
currently?
Are.
Currently?
Okay. Yes. Because they say, in their minds, based on the size of the population and the amount of positive cases we have every day, we got too much COVID. So we are CDC level 4. Now, a lot of countries are at CDC level 4, but we would prefer that we were not. And so we cannot grow or rebound as quickly as we need to be until we vaccinate more of our population. Because if we vaccinate more of our population, the number of COVID cases will go down. Now, how do I come to that conclusion?
I was just going to ask.
So if you look at the United States, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So in January, they had 225,000 positive cases a day. 225,000 positive cases a day on average in the month of January.
Mm-hmm.
That number has now decreased to 25,000, roughly. 25,000 cases per day. And in some instances, it's gone down to 14,000 cases a day. But let's say an average of 25,000 cases a day. So their population has embraced, by and large,
mm-hmm.
the vaccine. They've come up with all sorts of creative ways to get people vaccinated.
Vaccine, though, Minister?
Hold it now. Wait, let's focus on the topic of vaccination.
Okay.
So let's establish that vaccinations improve the number of positive cases that you that
for right
you
now in this yes. moment, we yes. will do that. Yes. Go
so,
on. Yes, sir.
So if more people get vaccinated, I can leap to we will have less cases. If we have less cases, the amount of COVID we have, the amount of people who are sick, the amount of people who are in hospital would decrease and our situation will improve. Now, I'm not just looking at it from an economic standpoint. If you get vaccinated, you are less likely to end up in hospital. I mean, that's by significantly. And you are less and therefore you're less likely to have an unfortunate outcome. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, if you're vaccinated, you are less likely to spread the virus if you become infected, because you can still become infected. You are less likely, reduced by 90%, your ability to spread it on to someone else.
So by 90%?
By 90%.
So the AstraZeneca vaccine you're talking about, Minister?
I'm talking about vaccines. We'll get to AstraZeneca in a minute. Let's establish vaccine, because I know you...
Because you know we need to talk about AstraZeneca because that's what's here in the Bahamas.
So we're talking about vaccines.
Uh-huh.
And vaccines, number one, reduce the amount of COVID. Number two, reduce the number of deaths. And three, reduce the number of cases. So vaccines work. That's my bottom line. Now, you want to focus specifically on the AstraZeneca because that's what we have here. That's what we're offering.
Of course. Yes, sir.
So AstraZeneca has been robustly rolled out in the United Kingdom, has been robustly rolled out in a number of countries. And I think, and I have still yet to see.
And it's been robustly shut down in a number of countries.
So I have yet to see evidence where the number of cases of an unfortunate outcome from the use of AstraZeneca are beyond the 0.0001%. So my point is that in 99.999% of the times, you have a positive outcome. The number of cases of an unfortunate outcome, and I'm sure each vaccine has them,
mm-hmm.
And you may argue AstraZeneca more so than, say, Pfizer, but still, it's less than 0.0001%.
Has there been one report concerning blood clotting as it relates to Pfizer? Just one. None, sir.
Yeah,
zero.
Okay, so let's take your example. The evidence that I've heard is that there are...
This is according to the CDC and the WHO.
Okay, so let me just say this. So the number of cases that I've heard where this is a problem is one in 100,000 doses applied.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take the population.
Which vaccine you're talking about there
AstraZeneca,
now? You're talking
AstraZeneca.
About,
okay. mm-hmm. So you're going to have one possibility of an... And I haven't heard deaths. I've just heard an unfortunate outcome, blood clotting or whatever. So one in 100,000 cases.
Okay.
So 300,000 people can take the vaccine here in this country. The rest are kids and therefore excluded from the sample. So there's 300 persons in this country who could take the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So that's 600,000 doses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's six people. So my point is...
Mm-hmm.
The chances of you having an unfortunate outcome from this vaccine are so remote that it is clearly to your advantage and to the advantage of all in your family to get the vaccine. Now, is there a possibility someone could have an unfortunate? Yes. Nothing is 100% certain.
Not just unfortunate death.
It's 100% certain.
Yes.
Is everything 100% certain? No. And I'm sure you could speak to every medication, every vaccine uh-huh. that has come preceded this one. And I'm sure in those instances, there were unfortunate outcomes. But do we want to get rid of all these emergency orders? Yes. Do we want to return to the lifestyle that we're used to in terms of freedom of movement and living our life as normally as possible?
Mm-hmm.
Do we want our economy to rebound as quickly as possible? Do I want to go back to work?
All of the answers to like, those questions
all of these,
yes.
All of these.
Yes.
Are directly related
mm-hmm.
to our uptake in the vaccine. Our rebound of our economy is going to be directly tied to the acceptance and rollout of it. And if you look at countries and look at our competitors, look at Cayman, they well in the 70s. Look at other Caribbean countries.
When you say well in the 70s, what exactly do you mean? What are you referring to?
I mean, in terms of a number of people who have received the vaccine. Now,
okay.
You know, obviously they have a lot more supply and they're a lot more smaller population. So they're former colonies of European powers who could send them supply. So they therefore have access to this vaccine that we, being an independent nation, have not been able to get access to.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it is AstraZeneca is the workhorse of the vaccines that is being rolled out in many, many countries. Yes, you have one or two examples, or you may find some examples where they decided because of 5 or 6 cases, 7 cases, they've decided to pull back.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I've taken it. My leader has taken it. My mother has taken it. My brother has taken it.
Yeah, you told me quite a number of your family members have taken it.
So,
of course, you included.
You know, that is, you know, I'm scared. I taken it. Okay, and I want to return.
We're talking more about the AstraZeneca vaccine, specifically on the other side of this break, Minister. Thank you very much for being here with me on Influencers here on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM. And we are talking about, on the topic, that is tourism making a comeback. And according to what it is that we just heard the minister say, Dionisio de Aguilar, that this is pretty much going to be founded upon our agreeing to take the vaccine, the AstraZeneca.
Taking a vaccine.
Yeah.
I mean, the one that we have here is AstraZeneca, but we need to take a vaccine.
Okay. And so we're going to be talking about on the other side of the break some of the stats that you probably have not been made aware of as yet, because you said one or two interesting things that really got my attention. And I want to speak to those things on the other side of the break. So please stay tuned in right here to Influencers on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM. Need your picture taken? Well, if you want it to look its best, then go to the best. It's Soya Studios, capturing your special events, portraits, passport, job, and visa photos. Plus, there's more. Also offering professional printing services of business cards, letterheads, signs, and banners. Opened Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a legacy. 28 years and growing. Located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road. Call 361-7786.
Start your day the right way. Seven Seas.
Start your day the right way. Trust in the timeless tradition of Seven Seas Cod Liver Oil. Seven Seas Cod Liver Oil is a rich, natural source of omega-3, giving you the essential nutrients needed to promote good health and help make sure you're looking and feeling your very best. Whether it's one a day, high strength, or traditional, with Seven Seas Cod Liver Oil, you start your day the right way.
Start your day the right way with Seven Seas.
ACG Wholesale is the answer for retail grocery store owners and everyday shoppers who want to save big. ACG carries a variety of drinks, snacks, meat products, essential dry goods like rice and yellow grits, plus lots of wholesome produce. And ACG Wholesale is a proud distributor of Borden's Milk. Opened Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located next to Phoenix Supermarkets on East Street South. Call 392-1155. That's ACG Wholesale with quality service and great prices.
Welcome back to Influencers here on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM, and I'm your host, Lady Shima. And with me today, the Minister of Tourism and Aviation, the Honorable Dionisio de Aguila, also the Member of Parliament, FNM for Freetown. And we're going to be talking a little bit about him coming back now on the ballot, on the ticket. How does he feel about the 2022? Does he feel positive? Is the support there? We're going to wrap up the show with that, so you want to stay tuned, okay? But we are here talking about the AstraZeneca vaccine, and we are talking about this extreme hesitation with a good number of the populace in taking the jab. And, you know, ears to the ground, lots of persons saying, you know what, Lady Shima, I don't mind taking the jab. I just don't want the AstraZeneca jab because I don't know if I'm going to possibly die after taking this jab. You made mention before we went to the break, Minister, of not having heard about any deaths being related to the AstraZeneca. I'm going to read this for you from the BBC and a report that they published on April forth. And this is one of about five that I have found, either from the BBC. There was one that was put out by the Smithsonian, as well as the ABC. The MHRA, the UK's Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, said in a statement issued on April 4th, according to the BBC, out of the 30 reports of persons who developed a blood clot up to and including March 24th, sadly, seven of them have died. And that statement I just quoted is referring to 30 out of 18 million who had been vaccinated within the UK by that time. There were 30 of them who would have developed blood clots, and of the 30, seven died. Okay? And according to the same regulator, there were no reports of blood clots from the Pfizer vaccine. However, the MHRA chief executive, Dr. June Rain, stressed that the benefits of the AstraZeneca vaccine far outweighed any risk. Now, let me just hasten to say here, Minister, that I have found a lot of good data as it relates to the AstraZeneca's vaccine's fight against the COVID-19. However, it does not negate the fact that this is true. And this is one of four very credible reports who have reported the exact same data. All right. So there is this fear and there is this worry. And then also, too, the persons who develop these blood clots, they tend to be experienced by persons with very low levels of platelets. Okay, they have seen that in just about 100% of the persons who presented with the blood clotting as a result of the AstraZeneca. We do not have a medical history thing going on here. Are you about to take the jab? Okay, let's look at your medical history. Okay, according to your medical history, you probably should not take this job, and here is why. Okay, you good, you can take the job. We don't have that going on here in New Providence or anywhere else in the Bahamas. And so, I mean, what do you say to these cares and worries and concerns as it relates to the job that seems to be this go-to as the rebound miracle for the tourism industry?
So, you know, the evidence you produce is irrefutable. And I think I started off my comments by saying that, yes, there is a tiny, tiny, tiny risk that there will be an unfortunate outcome. And I think that almost everything that we do, and you said seven divided by how many million?
18.
Seven people.
It's 30 persons 30 out of the 18 million developed a blood clot, and out of the 30, seven died.
Seven died. So we're looking at unfortunate outcomes. So seven divided by 18 million. So, you know, everybody has a personal choice. Mm-hmm. Everybody can assume those risks. Everybody can, assess those risks, mm-hmm. okay. and make the decisions that they want. I am of the view, this is Denisio de Aguilar, that the risk of catching COVID and having an unfortunate outcome is probably far greater than that, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, we've had, sadly, in excess of 200 deaths mm-hmm. In the country from COVID. We've got these different strains that are coming. It's shifting. I think the Ministry of Health will have shown that it's shifting more to the young people now.
Yes.
And so, you know,
it is.
There is, you know, I've never come across anything that's absolutely 100% perfect. You might say, okay, Pfizer is in this particular example that you drew is 100% perfect. But I guess you could equally argue, but you don't know what the, you know, this could have a problem sometime later in the future.
Later on down, yeah. Yes.
So We have to go based on the evidence that is before us now.
Mm-hmm. True.
The government is only able at this point to access AstraZeneca. Mm-hmm. We haven't been able to access the other brands as of yet. You know, obviously the first world countries have, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word, hogged up all of the supply.
And you are still trying at this time.
And we are, you know, assiduously trying as best as possible, using every contact and all. But the problem is we're so small.
Mm-hmm.
So you need, you know, 200,000 doses or 300,000 doses. And, you know, it takes time. Remember now, you say, okay, I need 600,000 doses. Give me 600 because I can't distribute them immediately. And I have to look at the expiration date. So I have to get them in stages, mm-hmm. right? So that I can roll them out over time. This is an archipelagic country. It's complex. We got to get it rolled out. So when you're going out there and say, okay, I need 100,000 right now. Everybody's saying, man, you talk numbers. You know, India need like billions. Mm-hmm. And so it is very difficult. You're like a little tadpole at the table going, hey, can someone please?
Understood.
Mm-hmm. Can someone please take notice of us?
But the Bahamian populace just wants to know that, you know, that you're doing everything.
Oh no,
in your
we are on the phone with the speaking to the United States,
mm-hmm.
seeing what they could do as they are awashing vaccine. You know, Bahamians could jump on a plane today, go over to Florida, go into CVS, go into Walgreens, get a shot, whichever one they want, and get J&J one shot, come home. And that is irritating to us. They're taking their population down to 12 years old. And we still can't get to vulnerable components of our population. And
right,
it's just,
right.
it's morally wrong. And I think the Attorney General is right when he said it. But they have hogged up all the supply for the world and for thus us, the smaller nations. And so, you know, we are the Prime Minister, the Ministry of Health. Everybody is trying as best as possible
mm-hmm.
to get additional supply and additional products to give people a choice.
Okay.
You know, we are a top shelf diet people. We don't buy generic rice. We want Mahatma rice.
That's very right.
So, you know, so that is what our people want. We hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to fulfill that because at the end of the day, we want our people to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Now, we have AstraZeneca right now. I am of the view, Denisio Diaglia is of the view,
mm-hmm.
that there is a risk, but it's so infinitesimal
mm-hmm.
that it's worth the risk. That's my view.
Mm-hmm.
And so I encourage as many people as I can to take the vaccine because I am of the view that as more people get vaccinated, so too can we return to a normal life. I can't stand this curfew 10 o'clock in the night. It's getting on my nerves.
Okay, is this the only go-to solution, though, as a country that we have in fighting the COVID-19? We try to get as many persons as possible within the country to go ahead and take this AstraZeneca because we don't really have any other plan to combat the COVID-19 crisis. Would it be fair to say that, or yes or no?
No, what I would say is that we are combating this coronavirus outbreak with the taking of a vaccine. Now, the vaccine that we have available at this moment is AstraZeneca, but our plan is, and we've seen it in all countries where they've had a significant rollout, a significant reduction mm-hmm. in the number of positive cases on a daily basis. And people are starting to return back to a normal life
okay.
with the vaccination. Now,
okay.
you're making a case that, you know, AstraZeneca isn't the best option. There are other options, in your view, which are better and represent less risk.
Don't personalize it to the host. I'm just reading.
I don't mean it like that. I'm just
okay.
talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. You're presenting the case on.
I understand.
On
I get
so,
you, sir.
So, you know, I am of the view that, you know, as I said,
okay,
AstraZeneca is a perfectly credible option.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people have taken it without mm-hmm. any incident at all. And we should embrace it as well. That's my view.
Okay. That, understood. That's your view. And mm-hmm. you are entitled to your view, Minister. And I do respect it. But that said, let's talk a little bit about these numbers. I was looking at the source markets, the latest numbers from the official tourism website and looking at the source markets, United States, Canada, Europe, Latin America, etc., and looking at the comparison between the 2021 and the 2020 arrivals and seeing the percentage difference between the two, it's
horrendous.
It took my breath away just looking at it, right?
Yeah, 70,
for the 80, United 90%. States of America, I mean, wow, 68.2% change. And this is from the latest stats up to March, right? It seems to be done every quarter,
data. So you're absolutely right.
For Canada, 97%.
Yes, well, Canada has banned all flights from Canada to the Caribbean. Okay, so that they have no flights to the Caribbean. I mean, it's in my mind, it's crazy because they allow flights to the United States. And who has more coronavirus than them?
Okay.
So, you know, it allows flights to the United States, but they have to do that because it's the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't want their citizenry going off to the Caribbean and having a nice summer holiday. I mean, nice warm weather holiday.
Okay,
and so they canceled all of the flights. We have no direct flights coming in from Europe right now, although British Airways is about to resume once a week. So that's going to give us connection to Europe.
A decline of 91% between 2020 and 2021 for Europe.
But remember now, probably 90% of our foreign visitors come from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to stratify
the numbers.
Our numbers, right?
Yes,
so if you
that's
take
important.
Cruise
mm-hmm.
out of the 7.2 million foreign visitors, the record year in 2019,
mm-hmm.
75% of them 5.4 million mm-hmm. came on a cruise ship. Well, okay. That's down to zero. Ain't nobody on no cruise ship.
Let me just clarify right here that these numbers that I was referring to, these are stopover visitors.
Okay, so stopover visitors.
Yes.
Yeah, so out of the total of 7.2 million, 1.8 million came here by air or a private yacht.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that number, 83% of them came from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with Europe, no direct airlift. Canada shut down all flights. I would say well in excess of 90% of our foreign visitors are now coming in from the United States,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's why I said at the beginning of the show, it's great that they are having the most success at vaccinating their citizenry because
yes.
I am of the view mm-hmm. that the more people that get vaccinated, they're like, okay, free now. I could go and travel. I could live my life normally. Let me go to the Bahamas and let me have a warm weather destination. And then I'll say one other thing. We have been the beneficiary in the tourism sector,
mm-hmm.
in the stopover visitors, of a significant increase in the number of high net worth travelers or the affluent travelers
mm-hmm.
who have been coming to the Bahamas either by private yacht or by private aviation. So if you go to those hotels or boutique hotels
mm-hmm.
that cater to that segment of the market,
yes.
they have been doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been virtually unimpacted by COVID because they got people who could figure out
exactly.
how to navigate all of these health requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And they what has been interesting is they would have come here for a week. They say, I'm coming for a week. They get us, oh, this is nice. Oh, we might as well stay here because we need to go back to where we're coming from because they locked down and cold and dreary and wet and the children can't go
anywhere. It's benefiting us.
So let's stay a little bit longer. They get a short-term rental. And that has been, so while I would agree the numbers have decreased quite significantly,
mm-hmm.
I don't think the spend has decreased by the same amount. I think it's decreased by less
mm-hmm.
because those persons that have been coming have ended up staying longer and spending more. Mm-hmm. So that is my view.
Okay, good insight, Minister.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the difference here with the requirements for those who are vaccinated as opposed to those who are unvaccinated, right, travelers.
Mm-hmm.
And a major change made recently, right, with visitors traveling to the Bahamas from other countries who are fully vaccinated and have passed the two-week immunity period will be exempted from COVID-19 testing requirements for entry and inter-island travel. What do you say to persons who are concerned about this newest development, that persons who are fully vaccinated, they can just come here, no problem, no COVID testing required upon entry?
So this is based on the fact, I mean, this is backed up by the CDC. They're basically of the
view. And the CDC, they're saying you don't even have to wear a mask.
Yeah, well, you know, they are of the view, and I think Europe is doing the same,
mm-hmm.
That persons who are vaccinated, and I would have said this, are very, very, very unlikely, if infected, to pass it on to somebody else, right? So there is a possibility, but it's remote.
Mm-hmm.
It's under 10%. Probably even under 5%, but let's say under 10%.
That's still a big number, yeah. Minister.
So we are of the view that mm-hmm. if you're vaccinated,
okay,
as they say, beyond the 14 days, your ability to contract the virus and spread the virus on is significantly reduced,
mm-hmm.
where we don't need to go through the whole palaver of PCR testing in order to come into the destination.
Now, what do you say to those persons who say that you're putting your own people at risk for the sake of the almighty dollar, even though we do need the almighty dollar, especially when it comes to the rebounding of the industry?
I would say that we are guided by our health professionals.
Okay.
And this is what they have said is an acceptable, you know, everything in life is a bit of a risk.
Okay.
And clearly they're we're of the view that it's acceptable,
mm-hmm.
And yes, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get persons back to work. We have to get people regaining the dignity of earning an income and having a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not perfect, but we feel that it's a step that other countries are making.
Okay,
and where the CDC is saying that you know you can once vaccinated,
mm-hmm.
you can. As you say, travel without a mask. You can travel without getting this PCR testing.
And there are a lot of people who don't really trust that, Minister, but yeah. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. You have to go according to the health experts,
yeah.
right?
So we're embracing
and trust
that.
Their word. Yes. Let's make a little bit of a segue here and talk a bit about some of the good news, right, as it relates to tourism in the Bahamas, some of the latest happenings, I call it. The Exuma Airport, I was very inspired by that, the new international airport for Exuma. $65 million, largest investment in Family Island Airport. And during a time like this, Minister, though, of course, the Prime Minister, Dr. Hubert Minnis, would have said, early in my administration, we made a commitment to Exuma to build a state-of-the-art airport here in Georgetown, a modern facility that will be the envy of the region. What do you think about the timing, Minister, even though, of course, this is quite needed? What are your thoughts?
So let's understand the business model here.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were taking money out of the Treasury,
mm-hmm.
$65 million, and we were building this airport, one might argue
mm-hmm.
that that's not a wise move at this time. We've got other more pressing needs, income support, food support, as people navigate this coronavirus.
Of course,
We have to keep them supported,
mm-hmm.
right? But the business model is different here.
Mm-hmm.
You might argue, why are we building a $250 million port in downtown Nassau? Well, the business model is this, that we go out, we raise that money independently, or we borrow the money, or we invite persons to come in as shareholders in the concession, not in the asset. And I remember now, the government of the Bahamas will always own the asset.
Mm-hmm.
That's never in question. But what you do is you go out and you get private sector money, and that money redevelops that asset,
mm-hmm.
and then user fees repay those investors. So look at the Lyndon Pindling International Airport as an example. Beautiful airport.
Mm-hmm.
We spent almost $500 million renovating that airport.
Yes.
And that, until recently, until now,
mm-hmm.
never cost the taxpayer a dollar. The user fees, mm-hmm. the persons using that airport embedded in their ticket is a fee of $48, right? That fee would repay the debt or the monies borrowed to rebuild that airport. So we call these PPPs, public-private partnerships. Private
mm-hmm.
sector money
mm-hmm.
will lead to the development of an asset, and the user fees will repay the investors. Now, that is a commonly used model
mm-hmm.
in the redevelopment of infrastructure. Our Family Island airports, nobody pays to use them. You come in and out of them as many times as you want, and nobody pays to use them. No airport in the world still operates that way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want a renovation or revitalization of your airport, this is obviously the way governments are now serving to do this, so they conserve their cash to focus on the direct needs of the people, and these assets are paid for by the users.
Talk specifically about Exuma as an attraction, though, as an attraction point when it comes to the Bahamas with this kind of investment being made on the island of Exuma.
So, first of all, think of Exuma as 365 keys.
Mm-hmm.
I can always remember it because that's the number of days in a year. So it is, you know.
I know how exquisite it looks.
It's the jewel in our crown, right?
It is, it is.
Yeah, right? So, and there is a growing demand.
Yes.
To experience this jewel.
Mm-hmm.
And
could you possibly give me any numbers? I mean,
no, I don't have them off the top of my head.
Okay.
When things was booming, I remember when things, you know, as we going through COVID,
I understand.
I won't remember these numbers we see, and I won't remember the numbers when they was booming. So, you know, the demand, even mm-hmm. in COVID, and you know, we see this. Actually, this is quite interesting. We see that the Family Islands are very resilient,
mm-hmm.
and the decrease in Family Island arrivals
mm-hmm.
is always generally less than the decrease in Nassau and Grand Bahama in the time of a recession or in
mm-hmm.
the time of a pandemic. Because, first of all, the visitors are extremely loyal to those islands.
Yes,
and
yes.
Secondly, they have means to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And third, they want that, as we like to say, the Family Islands were ideally constructed for social distancing.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this right before we segue into talking a bit about politics. The other hat that you wear as the Minister for Tourism and Aviation, and the government of the Bahamas signing the more than $300 million air navigation services agreement with the Federal Aviation Administration. After more than 50 years, the Bahamas will finally be able to collect its own overflight fees.
So I'm extremely proud about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have been talking about planes flying through our sovereign airspace.
Yes.
And we're not getting one iota
mm-hmm.
of a benefit from that fact.
Mm-hmm.
So I always liken to it. Think of our airspace as a hotel. And people have been using our hotel and not paying us for it.
Mm-hmm.
So what used to happen prior to the signing of this agreement was that airlines would fly through the airspace.
Mm-hmm.
And they would pay the Americans directly for the provision of what we call air navigation services, or put it in layman's terms, air traffic control
services, right?
Yes, yes.
So as you're flying through the airspace, the Americans provide the air traffic control in 75% of our sovereign airspace, and the Cubans provide the air traffic control in 25% of our airspace.
Mm-hmm.
And the users of the airspace, the planes, would pay them directly. And we were locked out of the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So there were many ways to solve that problem, and we were on a path that clearly wasn't working. It hadn't yielded the results that we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I changed tack marginally. And now what I've done is what the government has done, or what my team has done, is interjected the government into that relationship. So now we tell the airlines what they must pay to use the airspace.
Mm-hmm.
And we have in turn negotiated agreements with the Americans and the Cubans to manage the airspace on our behalf.
What specifically has brought about this change? This has been going on for a very, very, very long time.
So what I think happened was we kept going for the ability to manage and provide the air traffic control services in our airspace.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a decision that we get to make.
Okay.
We have to go to the International Civil Aviation Organization, which is a UN body, and that determines who manages what airspace on the planet.
Okay.
And they look at your capabilities,
and
they say, are you able to provide that service? Well, we don't have the capability to provide air traffic control services in our airspace. And in order for us to get there, we needed to invest a whole heap of money.
Mm-hmm.
But we ain't getting the money from the overflight fees. So we were always trying to, you know, how do we provide the service, but we don't really have the resources to provide it? And we were trying to negotiate, I believe, from a position that didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know what? Let's focus on the money. Let's get the money. Because the money will then give us the capability to build out the infrastructure.
Yes.
Okay, so how do we get in between that relationship between the airline and the guy who's providing the air traffic control services, the FAA for the Americans and this organization called ECNA for the Cubans?
Mm-hmm.
And I made the case that, look, listen here. This is our sovereign airspace. You can't use my sovereign airspace without dealing with me.
That's right.
So we interjected a body in between the airline and the air traffic controller and said, you got to go through us. And by the way, we will determine what the fee is.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll pay the fee to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we will then turn around and make an agreement with the Americans and the Cubans to provide the service. So we are in the driver's seat.
Yes.
So now we negotiated with the Cubans and we negotiated with the Americans. You tell us what we need to pay you to provide the air traffic control services. And then we turn around and charge the airlines what we feel is a fair price. You know what the amazing thing is about this agreement?
What's that?
Is that the Americans agreed to provide the service, the air traffic control service, for free.
What exactly, some of the strategies that you are engaging right now at this time to really see through a rebound of the tourism industry, apart and aside from the whole vaccination process?
Oh, well, you know.
Something that's more specific to the industry.
So, you know, we have a first-class marketing and advertising strategy that, you know, we've learned a great deal about how people purchase vacations right now, certainly from the United States. A huge portion of those persons purchase their vacations online.
Mm-hmm.
So we've completely enhanced the Bahamas.com website. We do a lot of advertising online. We build relationships with the online travel agencies like Expedia.
Okay.
So what you do is you get your marketing data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where people who are coming to the country, what zip code they're coming from,
mm-hmm.
which area of the United States, so you know where you're yielding the most passengers and therefore you can zero in your marketing dollar. So it's a very data-based strategic. I have an excellent team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't get into the weeds because they're doing a good job and they know what they're doing and they're the ones that produce the 7.2 million foreign visitors. So
there you go.
So it's working.
Exactly.
And they get it. And then, of course, we have a edgy, sexy advertising campaign with Lenny Kravitz. Of course, he's half Bahamian. He lives in a loose, loves the country.
Yeah.
He's always
I love that
to
campaign. It's awesome.
So we have had tremendous success in attracting persons to the destination. And we feel moving forward, we'll have that same success. So the formula works. I've got a great team. We have a great ad agency. We come up with great ideas and we understand where our purchasers purchase their vacation. Obviously, we ain't advertising in the UK. We're not advertising in Canada. So we know when we got to ramp down and ramp back up.
Of course.
And how to do it inexpensively and to get the best bang for the buck. Because you can't advertise on television all day long.
mm-hmm. or on billboards. That stuff is very expensive. So you have to figure out where your customers are purchasing okay. their vacations and make sure you touch them.
Mm-hmm. Quite impressive. Let's end this conversation today on an election 2022 note. I know that you are the incumbent for the Freetown for the on the F&M side of things. And I asked you when you walked in the studio, how are you feeling? How are you feeling about this? Do you think that you're good to go or that the F&M is in trouble? And what was your response to me, Minister? What was your response?
I am of the view that, you know, there's work to be done.
Yes.
There's no doubt the impact of Dorian mm-hmm. and the coronavirus pandemic has negatively impacted a lot of persons.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of people without a jobs. There's lots of people that are laid off. There's a lot of people who are suffering.
Yes.
Because
the misery index is high.
Yeah, yeah, yes. As a result of the coronavirus pandemic. But I feel mm-hmm. that the Free National Movement is the best government to rebound us out of this nightmare and to get us back on track. We were doing a fabulous job mm-hmm. prior to Dorian and the pandemic. We had reduced the deficit quite significantly, mm-hmm. To the lowest level in 10 years. We mm-hmm. had increased employment. And, you know, when you spoke to taxi cab drivers, when you spoke to persons as I did in the tourism sector, man, they say, man, it had never been so good. They were, things was hot mm-hmm. and we were doing very well. And
so you don't believe that anything that went awry has anything to do with F&M governance?
No, I don't think
so. It's purely COVID-19 and Dorian.
And Dorian, absolutely.
Nothing to do with bad governance.
No, I think that we were the victim of this once-in-a-century pandemic okay. and the strongest hurricane in the history of the Bahamas and the history of the Caribbean. That you could never have told me when I came into this office that I would be making decisions on who could dine inside and who could dine outside and what the rules were and who could open and who could close. And, you know,
I'm sure.
These things are foreign to all of us. And mm-hmm. did we get it right all the time? No. Did we make some mistakes? Absolutely. But who there was no playbook.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to figure this out along the way. And, you know, I'm sure the naysayers would say we didn't do a good job. I would say we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the economy will rebound, and I think we're in the best position. We're the best party
okay.
to navigate us out of this nightmare and to put us back on a sure footing, to okay. get our tourism sector back up and running, and to get people back to work,
okay.
and to bring some dignity back into the lives of Bahamians. Because this food insecurity, the laid off, the misery index, as you refer to, mm-hmm. has significantly impacted the people in Freetown, as an example. As I'm on the ground, I hear the stories.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's huge. And you extrapolate that throughout the country.
Of course.
You understand how bad it is. But we are coming out of this. And I really strongly believe that we are the best party mm-hmm. to navigate us back to where we were.
Okay, so there you heard it from the minister himself, the Honorable Dionisio Diagala, the Minister of Tourism and Aviation, and of course, F&M Member of Parliament for Freetown, saying that the F&M is the party, the government, that is able to navigate us through this nightmare called COVID-19. What say you as we wrap up Influencers here today on Guardian Talk Radio 96.9 FM? I'm your host, Lady Shima. Until next time, everyone, blessings.
Influencers was brought to you by
7Seas. Start your day the right way. Soya Studios, located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road West. ACG Wholesale, with quality service and great prices. The Beauty Barn, hair and beauty supplies, delivering beauty products straight to your door. WhatsApp 242-812-8500. Real Time Sound Studios and Global Transformation Media, transforming you from the inside out.